is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, all eyes are on China when it comes to this pandemic right now, and there is a lot to discuss within our relationship with the relationship of the United States and China. Not just the seeds and the origins of how this thing started, but even some of the dialect now going on between the United States and China, where you see threats where they're really coming out and even threatening to hold back particular medications, pharmaceuticals, things of this nature. It's a very interesting time, and the stakes are pretty high. I want to dive into that today with all of you people and talk about China in a bigger way, and really a town hall discussion. We have a lot of your questions and thoughts. I think we'll cover some ground here in the next hour, so let's buckle up and stay with me here as we bring on here a terrific panel of experts here. And let me introduce them all at once so we have that and you can have in your mind who is on the program today. A voice you're familiar with, we'll start with Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst. She's a political commentator and host here at America Out Loud. Dr. Baruch Plettner joins us. Baruch holds degrees in aerospace engineering and business administration and is the author of many scientific publications and patents. Dennis Santiago is here. He's an American strategist focusing on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. Rosemary Gibson joins us. She's the author of China RX, Exposing the Risk of America's Dependence on China for Medicine. Del Wilbur is here. He's a former CIA and Department of Defense Intelligence and Counterterrorism officer. This should be a very interesting conversation. So let's talk about China first. I mean, you've got a country here that is the most populous on the planet, 1.4 approximately billion people on the planet. Think about that in the scope and size of where America is. I mean, we're about 327 on any given day, million. And so you just put that into context, people, right away, and you can see the size and scope of what that means. A lot of mouths to feed, a lot of medications, a lot of masks they need, and there's a lot to that relationship with China. But China is also a communist country, and things are held very secret there. And that has been traditional. That didn't just start here with this pandemic here. That's been their MO right along here. I'd like to start there and talk about why would China be so secretive when honesty and openness might have brought help and possibly could have saved thousands of lives. Let's start right there with Ilana Friedman. Ilana, why the secrecy, please?
The general idea that most people have is that they don't know that communist countries are secret by nature, and that I don't really think people have a clear idea of what actually went on there. But there is a growing validity to the story that the virus was not something that happened in nature, but that it was created in a bioweapons laboratory, and that there was an accident in the laboratory and the virus escaped. And the Chinese government is trying to cover it up. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. Why wouldn't they? They don't want to get caught making having created a virus that has now taken worldwide 57,000 fatalities. This is huge. It's almost every country in the world. Over a million people have been infected. And it all came from a concerted effort by the Chinese government to create a bioweapon that would kill their enemies. So this is a good reason why they wanted to hide it. And I think that is probably the most compelling explanation.
Okay. Rosemary, what do you think to that point here? Talking about number one, we're talking about China's secrecy with all of this, but also the idea of how this thing got started. There's a lot of conversation that I do want to talk about today, whether it was from this meat market down the boulevard or whether it was a biochemical weapon. There's a lot of unknowns there. But let's stay on the secrecy first. What do you think?
Well, Malcolm, I can't speak to the source of the coronavirus, but I can say that there has been a lot of secrecy, certainly in our country also, about where our medical supplies come from to support us during a global pandemic, or just as we have now. And that has impeded our preparation for it. That's a different issue that I'm sure we'll get to.
Dennis, let's bring you in here and talk about, let's keep it going here on the secrecy part of it and what your thoughts are to, could be millions of lives at some point. We don't really know, but certainly thousands of lives at this point. Should we be surprised with that, number one? And what do you think about the origins of this thing?
So, no, we shouldn't be surprised. And I think your number is a little low. I think the number is going to be in the hundreds of thousands before this is done.
You mean that will be dead?
Yeah, that will be dead. Because this thing is still propagating its way around the world. It's highly virulent. And the Chinese, I think, are very, very embarrassed about it. And if you look at the things that have been coming out of China that have tried to cover it up and have tried to cast a story that China is being helpful around the world, these are all artifacts of a nation that knows they really, really messed up. And they're trying to do something to make up for that. And they're, for the most part, the government itself, the Chinese government, has been fairly humble in what they're trying to do. There have been moves by the Communist Party and the agents of the government, that because they get themselves out of control and they're hyper patriotic, to spin stories about this being a U.S. thing that was brought to China. The world doesn't appreciate what the Chinese are doing and that kind of stuff. But these are all artifacts of a nation that's very, very embarrassed. And I'll tell you one thing that I really noticed in this week. President Trump and Xi Jinping had a telephone conversation. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me, because silence is information as much as noise is that after that phone call, a lot of the rhetoric from China Daily and China Global and, you know, the rags of the of Chinese propaganda stopped.
Interesting. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? So it stopped once that phone call had taken place, huh?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
Well, you can imagine what was said right there, I would imagine, between President Trump and Xi Jinping. Very clearly, Trump is put out by a lot of this. In fact, Dennis, I get the sense that like you said, there's a lot of secrecy in all of this. And as someone was just saying, even on our side of the parade here, I think Rosemary was just saying, here in the United States. And that's the case, I think, a lot of people sense with even the president, that he's not being totally forthcoming with information. How do you feel about that?
They are not being forthcoming because they really don't know. Okay. Unlike China, which is a central government, mm-hmm. that does everything top down and has control. And their problems in China were a breakdown between the central government and the regional leadership there that didn't know what to do because they weren't getting clear orders. In the United States, it's completely the opposite, okay? Responses to pandemics are the responsibility of the states and are captained by the governors of the states, and the federal government operates as a backstop to the state governments. And that's the way our system is designed. I mean, that's how FEMA is structured and all that kind of stuff. And at this point, what's actually happening is, I think, in the world of the media and the world of social media, people have this interpretation that the United States is a top-down central government operating entity, just like the Chinese were, because, you know, you're looking at the Chinese model, and it's not. We have a very different way of responding to crisis, and we should be turning to governors. Okay. And there's 50 of them, and they're not all going to be perfect, and they're not going to all get it right. And a lot of them are out of position. And so it leads to confusion. The one criticism I will make is that both on social media and in the mainstream media, people are kind of like turning to the president and going like, this is your job to solve everything. And it's not.
I know. I'm chuckling because it is so accurate what you say there. And, you know, further, I think your explanation you just put out is very well said as far as some of the problems we're having with 50 states. It's like 50 different countries, really. I mean, 50 different people who had those states. And actually, the president has come under quite a bit of fire for that, for not pulling the lever and really calling martial law or doing some extreme things which I've reported on and talked about here on the platform many times with you all, that it is ironic because they've been calling him a dictator and a king for quite some time now. And that's exactly what he's not doing right now, but yet he is under a lot of fire. When you listen to Dennis's comments there, it kind of adds up a little bit, people, doesn't it now? Interesting. Let's bring on now Baruch Plettner. And Baruch, let's open up here to a couple of thoughts here. Number one, we understand who China is. We've been painting that picture here. So the secrecy is really not too much of a surprise, I guess, or shouldn't be. But the origins of this thing, where do you think this thing got its start, Baruch? Because, you have a different belief system on this, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the bioweapon theory, just because, not that I'm an unbeliever in China's nefarious motives. I'm a big believer in that. But, looking at this just from a scientific perspective, because that's kind of my training, this virus makes for a horrible, horrible bioweapon. I mean, it kills a small percentage very slowly. It spreads very quickly, including to those who spread it or who want to spread it. So it makes for just a really bad battlefield bioweapon. A good bioweapon is something like anthrax that you can spray on, the enemy division. They develop difficulty breathing, they die, but it's not transmitted easily from person to person. So the effect of it is limited both temporally in the time domain and spatially in the space domain. So that's a bioweapon. A bioweapon, like a chemical weapon or an explosive or a nuclear device or anything of that nature, the entity deploying the weapon wants its effects to be limited, both in times and in space, so it doesn't hit itself and it knows exactly what it's doing. Because when you attack somebody, you also take an enormous risk that if this attack somehow goes beyond what you intended, the enemy can deploy means against you that you won't necessarily want them to deploy. In other words, weapon is something that you want to control. Any weapon is something that you want to control.
Well, but China lost control of this, didn't they, Baruch, along the way? I mean, they lost control of this.
But the thing is that the nature of this virus, and that's just my opinion, just the nature of it makes it highly uncontrollable because of its high transmissibility and infectiousness. And that to me, this virus just makes for a really bad poorly designed bioweapon. Yeah.
Are we looking right now, I think in an interesting sort of way, we're kind of looking at the future of future warfare here. When you talk about the bioweapons and the explanations you just lay out there, Baruch, we're sort of looking at where this thing is going to evolve in the future. I mean, again, I get the sense anyways, Baruch, if you come back again 50 years from now or 100 years from now, I mean, this thing may be all too common.
Yeah, I mean, I think that epidemics as such in human history always happened when there was a mixing. You know, if you were a Native American kind of sitting here, hunting deer, whatever, and then European shows up, it's a mixing of populations and you have measles and that kind of stuff. You know, the plague in Europe was brought from Asia in rats and fleas and so on. And even the more recent SARS and MERS and all that kind of stuff, it all happens when you have mixing of populations that, were not being mixed previous to that. And the reason that China is kind of the epicenter of a lot of these recent things like SARS and so on is precisely because of that. You had people in small villages in China eating bats or not eating bats. That to me is beside the point. But the point is that they've never ever mixed with anyone else. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, China opens up its economy, starting, let's say, in the 80s. And all of a sudden, millions and upon millions of Chinese travel to the West, and millions of upon millions of Westerners travel to China. Inside of China, you have people from a small godforsaken village, God knows where, all coming to Beijing and to Shanghai and to Hong Kong and so on. And this this mixing, that's what creates those flares up.
So you think there's something to these wet markets or things they talk about? There's a lot of calls right now for them to shut those down throughout their, I mean, a lot of calls, very loud, for them to shut those down across the country. And they do some, I mean, it's a different culture out there entirely with the kind of relationship they have with animals. I mean, my God.
Yeah, Well, I mean, the scientific name for this transmission from animals to humans is zoonotic. And these zoonotic viruses do exist. I mean, we know that. It's not the first one. It's kind of just the worst one.
You know, listen, Michael Pillsbury is the director of the Center for Chinese Strategy at the Hudson Institute. He's the author of the 100-Year Marathon. He warns the Chinese will try and use the Wuhan virus to exploit and surpass the United States in every area. And that's the narrative. That's the talking point we're hearing from the fallout from this entire virus and pandemic, actually. Let me read you this quote, Dell, and I'd like you to opine on Michael Pillsbury says here, and also this whole thing in relationship with China. So we haven't heard from you as a CIA guy. I wonder what you think. And so here's what Pillsbury says. He says, they believe China, this is their time, the next year or two where they can surpass the United States. They probably intend to cheat on trade agreements, he says. President Trump will get angry at that, you think? And at the same time, the Chinese are holding out that they are ahead in vaccine testing. So we better be polite to China or they'll not share the vaccine formula with us. And this, he got this information from a Chinese executives out there who told him this in high ranks here. Dale, let's talk about that from your background as a military guy and your experience in China and listen to everything we've discussed. What do you think?
I think that there's probably a great deal of truth to that. One thing I'd like to also mention, I guess, to add on to what Dennis was talking about, one thing that wasn't mentioned was that saving face in the Chinese culture is extremely important, and that is one of the reasons why they've not been forthcoming about what took place in the starting in Wuhan anyway. One of the other issues I think is the fact that as much as we try to call ourselves, many of us anyway, try to call ourselves experts on China, the only experts on China are the Chinese. You know, it is a culture that is way different from what most Westerners are able to get an understanding of. And part of the other problem is the fact that it's difficult for us to penetrate from an intelligence standpoint. And you know, recent reports, if they're true, we lost a lot of our intelligence assets in the last few years in China. So we're kind of behind the curve a little bit on this.
Do you have any idea of the origins of this? Do you have any intelligence research that you've picked up on or anybody that has told you the origins of this?
Well, I go along with Ileana, the Chinese weapon facility in that. The fact that this may not be the best designed biological weapon doesn't mean that it wasn't one that they were experimenting with. You know, it you know, we experiment with a lot of different weapon systems, and that some turn out to be good weapon system, effective, and others, you know, are put back on the shelf. So it doesn't mean that it wasn't being tested as a potential biological weapon that did escape and got away from them. And, and you know, they've been trying to play, or we've all been trying to play catch up.
Rosemary, the Communist Party, their news outlets have been interesting when you follow. In fact, I recommend everybody do that. If you really want to know some truth, quite frankly, go to the foreign news outlets, far better a lot of times than the United. And I hate to say that, but you'll get actually more interesting angles and observations than you will in the United States media, because sadly, the media here in the U.S. has declined at a rapid pace now. But anyways, the Communist Party news outlets, they are saying that they will withhold all medical exports to the United States. And if they do so, that our country, the U.S., would fall into the hell of the, and that's their words, Rosemary, fall into the hell, quotes, of the virus. In fact, they could do some real harm temporarily because China provides, as you say, I think you have stats on this. I want you to opine on this. As I understand it, about 90% or more, I guess, of the U.S. imported drugs, as well as medical equipment, the surgical masks, the gloves we've been hearing so much about. Educate us a little bit on that, please.
You're absolutely right that the Chinese government stated in its state news outlet that it has threatened the United States with a ban on exports of critical drugs, and these are things we need for survival. You know, we can't make any biotics anymore in the United States. We can't make penicillin. We can't make the critical drugs that are being used in hospitals now that are caring for people with severe coronavirus. we depend on China for the core chemicals to make them.
Rosemary, what's the core reason you would say that we were so laxed in this area? I mean, who do you with your research really blame this on? Because what the picture you just paint out there is beyond ugly. I mean, it's ridiculous that we're in this position.
We have to look in the mirror here. Huh. You know, how is it that we allowed our capability to manufacture antibiotics, which are essential for the treatment of infectious disease caused by bacteria?
See, I don't understand this. How does this happen?
We let it go without any alarms. We let go our ability to make thousands and thousands of medicines. And that's why it took me 3 years to figure this out and do the research for China Rx. You asked earlier on about, is there silence going on and we're not talking about things? Well, this subject of the medicines we need to survive as a country, we just let it go and gave it into the hands of China. Now, they certainly engaged in violations of trade laws and they form cartels. They have an industrial policy and a plan to become the pharmacy to the world, and certainly in other advanced manufacturing sectors. This is all part of the plan.
Hey, when did you write that book, by the way? What year?
It came out in 2018, and exactly on page 3 of the preface, predicted this, that I went back and looked at it this morning. Mm-hmm. In the event of a natural disaster or a global pandemic, if China shuts the door, mm-hmm. the United States will be waiting in line with other countries for medicines.
Well, you were prophetic.
Regrettably so. But this is, to answer your question, this is part of a larger economic war that's taking place. And look what's happening around the country economically. It's killing jobs and the economies and the spirit of people. Just walk around your towns. I'm sure you've seen them. People are not going to work. The streets are silent. This is also part of an economic war with its economic impact on the United States, as well as demoralizing the population global pandemic.
How long do you think it will take for the United States to get back into the driver's seat? I'm talking about with the pharmaceuticals themselves, Rosemary. And do you think is this honestly and truly the wake-up call that they need in this country to pull it back? Are you optimistic, I'm asking?
Well, I've been heartened to hear messages coming out of Washington. It's, right now, what do we have? We have 50 countries that have banned exports of medicines and medical supplies. And this is what happens in a pandemic. Each country is going to, draw up the bridge and keep their own to protect their own people. And this was, again, all predictable, but no one prepared. Even the biodefense establishment we have in this country is shocking that they totally missed this. We can bring it back. And so there's a recognition now, regrettably, in this situation that we can't rely on other countries for products necessary for our survival.
Yeah, you almost can't make sense of what you're talking about, Rosemary. The whole thing sounds like a conspiracy. How did we get here? I mean, summary, point of reference.
Sure. There's an executive order that's being drafted that would promote Buy American medicines for the Department of Defense, Health and Human Services, and the VA, which makes sense. Our taxpayer dollars would go to buy medicines for our military and veterans and so on. But there was, believe it or not, there was opposition from special interests to that executive order saying, it would destabilize global supply chains. Well, the global supply chain is in shambles, and it was not in good shape even before coronavirus. So it really is quite remarkable that there's opposition to making critical drugs fully here in the United States for members of the military, our veterans and HHS, and for the rest of us.
But
the situation now is so concerning when countries are stopping exports. China just came out with a statement April 1, an order that it will restrict exports of testing material, masks, and other protective gear. So folks are pulling up the bridges and cutting off supplies.
Yeah, and we see the conflicts with 3M in the past many days here with the president speaking out about that, Rosemary, with 3M because their major facility is in China. It's in Beijing, I believe, right?
They have a facility there, yes. And there was also a company based in the U.S. They have a manufacturer in China, and they had 9 million gowns that doctors use and nurses use in hospitals that are supposed to be, for sterile purposes, and they were contaminated. And they had to cancel surgery. So we have to really rethink our supply chain and our economic security. This is economic security as well as our national health security.
Just one other point I want to cover with you as we're moving along here. interesting statement put out by Politico. And, you know, as soon as I say that, you all kind of know where it's going to go. But anyways, it's important we cover it because they do have a big voice out there and a megaphone. So they say this: there's plenty to go around. Blame Trump, blame China, blame the wet markets, blame the spring breakers, blame the cruise industry, blame export bans, blame online influencers, blame governors who ignore numbers and wisdom of their neighbors, blame Bill de Blasio telling you to keep living your life, blame Fox News for telling viewers one thing and staff another. They all deserve it. It's probably fair to blame everyone who contributed to this system failure. I had to chuckle when I read that, people. I just could not stop laughing at that particular reference point from Politico. But it goes on here. I guess what I want to ask here is, who knew what when is the questions being asked right now. In fact, you actually see the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, has got already congressional committees flowing and things going. We haven't even got to the other side yet, and we're already talking about investigating who did what. You just know, people, what's coming down the road here with all of this. This will make the whole Russia impeachment thing and all of that minute compared to what this thing does. You know, I want to ask you, Ilana, let me bring you back on to answer this question specifically here. The Trump presidency has really been on defense for 3.5 years. I mean, it's been total defense for the entire from moment one of this presidency. And so now that there's a lot of fingers being pointed of how come, why ain't we more prepared, what happened, what have you, how much of a factor did all of that play into it? I'm talking about federal readiness, because clearly the federal government was not ready for this. What are your thoughts to that end?
Well, I think the terrible accusations and all of the interruptions by the Democrats in this process, particularly Nancy Pelosi coming in and disrupting a vote in the Senate, I think these were all distractions. Our president is fully capable of walking and chewing gum at the same time, and I've been very impressed with the fact that despite all of this going on, first it was the accusations of all these different kinds of non-crimes that he did, and then it was the pandemic, and he's being accused of delaying and all kinds of terrible stuff, which he didn't do. I believe that what he did was absolutely on target. He was following the recommendations of the World Health Organization and the CDC, and they said for a very long time the threat to the United States was, quote, low, unquote. And they held on to that for a long time. And in spite of that, he stopped the traffic from China coming here and probably saved a lot of lives by doing that.
I think it can be lost on nobody. The things I've been reporting to you over some time now in regards to the political leaders here in the, I mean, your elected leaders that everybody, that you, we the people, vote into office, both Democrats and Republicans. The failure that these political leaders have been unable to work together in any capacity for some time. The division that continues to grow here internally. And, you know, the warning you go back historically, of many of our great leaders over time who have warned Americans, I'm telling you, people, they have warned all of us that the real threat to America is from within America, not external forces. Think about that a moment, please, today. Let me just remind you of that point. I'm really talking seriously with you all here now about this. I mean, I warn you about this all the time. I mean, this is innate to my mission, and my goal here is to unite America and bring the country forward. But when you really understand and you look historically at the journey the United States has been through, and you see many of our great leaders with vast wisdom who have pointed out to us time and again the real threats against the United States, it can't be lost on you. So I want you to understand the real importance of these internal fights that are happening with the Speaker and the President and the Senate and the House and, you know, these branches of government that we have that are asphyxiated on destroying each other. And they really become the enemies from within. Now you can see the danger of all that. And now you can see why countries like China and so many others, I mean, you come right down the list of Iran and the Middle East countries, and they all are just, you know, licking their chops with the idea that America is so bent on destroying the president, number one, is so bent on getting him out of office, right up at the top of the list, is their main priority. Anyways, you get the sense of what I'm talking about. And you see the real threat here is exactly that. So, well, listen, let me welcome you all in here to Viewpoint this Sunday on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. I'm really enjoying this interchange with all of the experts here and the conversation we're having. I hope you're learning a few things yourself here. Got to get to some of your questions in just a moment here. Let me also remind you that it's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. It is a force. It's a grassroots movement, is America Out Loud. It's we the people that really take it back. And that's what this is all about. We just celebrate, in fact, right now, this month in April, our four-year anniversary at America Out Loud. So it is, we're still young by any standards, just a baby, in fact. But there's a lot happening on the platform. If you, in fact, people got more time in your hands, listen to great podcasts. All of our shows on talk radio go to podcast. You can get them on Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, any of the podcast networks. But you can also listen to America Out Loud Talk Radio 24/7 channel of talk radio on iHeartRadio, our media player apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. There are so many ways to connect, friends. There's no reason why not to. When you can hear We the People strike back and really get a sense, great, great columns and blogs to read and things to listen and watch. And it's all back there. Go take a visit trip and you'll stay a while. Be comfortable. It's a comfortable place and where you can feel comfortable and get the latest and the information you need. Let's bring it back here. And I want to bring back on here again, this great group of people here, Ilana Friedman, Dr. Baruch Plettner, Dennis Santiago, Rosemary Gibson, Del Wilbur, all join us here in this conversation here on China. So the idea here was to do a deep dive on China. I want to get to some listener questions now, and let me put them out here. And let's see if we can't get some answers here. Dan on LinkedIn asked, after the coronavirus goes away, how many lawsuits will we see against China or our own government in the United States? So we're talking specifically here about lawsuits, maybe, that, you know, how much of that we might see after the fact here. Any thoughts to that end, Baruch? A lot of legalities as this thing, you know, crosses the road?
Okay, yeah. I mean, as far as lawsuits go, I'm sure that since America has no shortage of lawyers, there will be a tremendous amount of lawsuits. But I think that in terms of actually these lawsuits succeeding and people actually, you know, recovering something, I think the chances of that are, you know, close to nil as far as governments are concerned, whether the Chinese or the American on every level, local, state, and federal, just because of a couple of things. One is lawsuits against foreign sovereign governments, even though they've been tried before, have always failed in terms of actually recovering cash. Right. So you could get a verdict, but you wouldn't recover cash. And suing the American government at each and every level is difficult also. But in this particular case, I have no doubt that there will be all kinds of acts by Congress and by state legislatures to basically put a stopgap on these types of lawsuits and on payouts given to citizens, because this epidemic is only just beginning. It's going to create unbelievable havoc on the. It's already doing that, and it's going to get much worse. So, any kind of individual recovery via lawsuits is, to me, pretty much unthinkable.
Yeah, and that's not a vote of optimism, what you say there, Baruch. That does not give me the warm and fuzzy, but I hear what you're saying there. Dennis, what do you think about the lawsuits? And, you know, Baruch has a valid point, obviously, to say, hey, listen, these, you know, you can try to sue, but, and of course, there, it is a sue-happy community out there for a lot of people that use it as a point of entertainment, actually. The chances of getting any money from China or the U.S. is probably not real high, huh?
You know, I'm completely with Baruch and the interpretation here that the litigious nature of the U.S. is it will go nowhere. The bottom line is the Spanish flu took 2 years, and at the end of 2 years, the world had changed. This pandemic will probably take 2 years to work through all of the repercussions of it. And I'm not just talking about the part where we're dealing with the medical emergency. I think we're also talking about the fact that we have also triggered an economic emergency, and we've triggered a cultural emergency. I mean, you know, at this point, all of the fears of people are coming out because people are afraid and people are reacting and people don't know how they're going to survive. And all of that is going to change. And by the time this is all said and done, the perspective of this planet will be very, very different.
I mean, yeah, no, you say some real important things there. And one of the points I want to come back to in a moment, because there's a question about what you say there. The two-year reference point is good to put that out there for folks to put into context. Because what you're saying really is, we're going to have to learn to live with this is what's going to happen right now. I mean, he's right when he says the 1917, 1918 pandemic, you know, this was back before our lifetime, people. But it happened, and it took a long time for the world to get through that. Dennis, let me stay with you and ask you this other question here from Anne Marie on Twitter. And she asked, as I look at clips of the streets of California and New York, I don't see the homeless or illegals laying on the streets anymore. Where are they? And who is taking care of them?
One of the more interesting things that, that has happened because of this is that the streets of California in particular, I can give you a reference on that because I am here, were cleaned up in the week or two leading up to the full lockdown. And I was driving around town and I could see collections of trucks and law enforcement officers and picking up little tent cities all over the place.
Where are the people, Dennis? Where are the people? They're put in place?
They have taken them. They have taken them in to either hotels, where they are, because they need to have them where they can observe them, supervise them, and keep track of who's getting sick.
So let me tell people, you're in Los Angeles right now, so let me tell folks that as well. Do you think this is an opportunity potentially to clean up the streets? Maybe I mean, I is that a silver lining somewhere?
The streets are actually very, very clean. Interestingly enough. So the sickest,
even
of the
Pelosi
sick,
streets, even her streets in San Francisco, I mean, come on.
They are. Yes. As a matter of fact, I mean, they're having a little bit more trouble up in San Francisco because of the way the things are there, but they're trying to do the same things.
But isn't it amazing though, that none of these solutions or ideas were ever in play when this wasn't here, but now they're scrambling to find answers and solutions to a problem that has grown in itself to become an epidemic, Dennis?
Yes.
Let me get another question here in, and I want to give this to Del Wilbur, please. And Del, this is from, let's see here, Betsy on Gab. And she asks, what is the lasting impact, do you think, to the United States relationship with China?
It's certainly going to be affected, but the problem that we have to look at this, I guess, through the viewpoint that, for China, 500 million casualties would be considered an acceptable loss to them were we to have any type of a military response. And just think of that. They're willing to give up, nearly half or just under half of their population would be acceptable. You know, there's only, as you quoted earlier, there's like 300 and maybe 30 million Americans. So we don't even, our entire population doesn't match what they would be willing to give up. So we're not going to be able to militarily have any kind of a response with them. I'm not really sure. I think it's a very difficult question because we simply don't have the ability to control what China does.
We're talking about how nefarious China is, and that's been a thread running through the conversation today, and a thread through just about all conversations, the nefarious intent of these people and what their real mission and goal is. And we do know by 2049, they want the goal of domination. They put that out there already. That's in the public purview here, so not really a surprise here. President Trump, when he talks publicly, Dell, in the media, he always says, oh, yeah, Xi Jinping is a friend of mine, and the China people, I love the Chinese people. He talks very optimistic. A lot of people get very confused. And I've had a lot of people ask me, why does the president do that when these people are misfits and they are evil people? And you would say what, sir?
Well, he's playing to their ego, to their, as I mentioned before about China, culturally, it's important for them to save face. So, you know, these are the kinds of, I mean, what good is it going to do to be the tough guy and threaten, you know, make empty threats, particularly empty threats that the Chinese know are empty threats. Mm-hmm. So is it better to try to maintain a working relationship with them Or is it, you know, is bluff and bluster going to have any impact? And, you know, I think the answer is obvious.
I want to get to another question here. And this is from Alfred on Twitter. And this is one, actually, some of our own people on the platform have a question. I've gotten a couple of emails in the last couple of days on this point, actually. And he's asking, wouldn't we have been better off with the economy if we had quarantined the people at high risk? The people, you know, that have the ailments or the very elderly or what have you, rather than the entire population, he asked. And granted, I would say to all of you, there are some exceptions to that because you are seeing some stories now where young people have contracted it or in some healthy people in their 30s and 40s have gotten it and some people have died in that particular case. Nothing is foolproof here, obviously. I mean, that's the qualifier of that question, I think. But the question is a real question. Wouldn't we have been better off with the economy? And we're talking about the economic conditions of all of this. What do you think about that point? Baruch, was that a possibility? Did we mess up here economically? Because we now have really thrown our economy in the trash bin, you know, and yet, you know, we really don't have any answers back at this point.
No, I think it was a necessary move because there's two things going on here that need to be separated kind of in our minds, right? One is the infection and the other one is the effect of infection. In other words, what happens once a person is infected. So we know that once a person is infected, their underlying state of health is a big determinant in terms of where this infection will go. Will it require hospitalization, ventilation, and will it lead to a fatal result? But that is true for any disease. And the other thing is that we all, most of us, have comorbidities. I mean, I'm healthy for my age, 57, but I have a slight diabetes. I have hypertension. Most people do. There are young people who are smokers. Well, that's a comorbidity and so on. So the idea that we are going to treat this epidemic on the side of what happens once you're infected, but we will not try to reduce the number of infections is to me a non-starter. Young people, including babies and people of every age, can be infected and others. And the only way to mitigate this this epidemic is to stop the spread of infection, not allowing, and the idea that we would just allow people get infected and then we would treat or we would try to have those vulnerable people maybe somehow avoid infection while infection is raging outside. This is just not scientifically sustainable by any measure. People talk lots about models. Well, and models have a bad name because of climate things and all kinds of stuff like that, and that all is true. But now we have a month of actual data in the U.S., actual data of infections, actual data of deaths. If you fit a function to that and you project it just for the very near future, for the next 10 days, the numbers of infected and dead are staggering. So this is a very, very serious matter that is going to have far-reaching implications. Wow. And the economy is going to be, people are now worried about the economy. Let me tell you something. 10 days from now, they will not be worried about the economy anymore.
You think it's going to get that bad, you're saying, with deaths?
Yes. By April 15th, we're going to have over 100,000 dead people in America, and that's guaranteed.
Wow, wow, wow. And which is why you've heard some of the comments from the president, people, where he has said it's going to be a very difficult 2 to 3 weeks coming up. And when we heard that, the death count wasn't really that high here. You did kind of, it did give me pause. It probably did you as well. Now you hear what Baruch says there. And there you go. If that's the case there, there's a lot of struggles to happen ahead here. Having said that, Dennis, are you in line with the thinking that we're going to really have some difficult times here with people dying over the next couple, 3 weeks?
Yes, I am. And it's not just people dying over the next couple of weeks in the United States, and in particular in the hottest of the hot zones of the United States, which would be the tri-state area of the country, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. I think it'll be lower in terms of the impact in the next couple of weeks in other parts of the country. It could lull us into thinking that the rest of the country isn't at as much danger as the hot zone because, you know, the news will concentrate on where the problem is worse. Wow. That doesn't mean that the problem is not there for the rest of the country.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, we're running right out of time on this particular segment. I could talk for hours with this group right here, people. There's no doubt about it here. Let me also tell you that the book from Rosemary Gibson, The China RX, is indeed in the America Out Loud bookstore, as well as all of Ilana Friedman's books are in the America Out Loud bookstore as well. Actually, all of our experts and top guests are in the bookstore. And it linked it right to Amazon. And there's just a great selection of great material to read there. I tell you about it all the time. You can get the link to that off the nav bar at AmericaOutLoud.com. We have the store there to really showcase the amazing talent of all of the experts, and we're thrilled to do it. First, let me give big thank yous here to Baruch Plettner, Adele Wilbur, Dennis Santiago, Ilana Friedman, Rosemary Gibson, for being here and being part of this town hall discussion here. My sense of a lot of the things we just talked about is I think we get a lot more truth here than we're getting, obviously, in a lot of the media heads that people are getting pretty fed up with. That's the problem with the Fourth Estate. They just keep beating the same drum rather than drill it down to some real accuracy and truth. And that's real important. And that's what we try to do here always, every day here on America Out Loud. It's important times here. I'm always wishing you the best and praying for each and every one of you out there, believe me. Listen, up next, I want to talk to you here about perhaps it is time to clear our independence again. I want to talk to you about In God We Trust and bring a bit of faith to the conversation here. These are, after all, times that people will turn in and potentially pray a little bit more, or maybe just find their source for strength. And faith is a big piece of our lives, I believe. So I'll take that up next year in a very intimate discussion we'll have on the conversation here as Viewpoint continues.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
What if a new treatment, backed by 17,000 scientific articles, was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
You know, all of us need to do an inventory ourselves and really count not only the blessings in our lives, but really do an account in ourselves of where we're at in this life. I've been talking to you about that on my other program, and I want to try to do that right now with you. And I would bring on a special gentleman to join me here in a very interesting piece he has up on America Out Loud. Let me welcome on here first, Ron Edwards joins us. Ron is a columnist here on America Out Loud, a very good columnist. He's a talk show host. He does these segments called the Edwards Notebook, which are fantastic. They're 90-second segments you'll hear throughout the day here at America Out Loud. It's great because you can get to the point to make a succinct point, and he does that very, very well here. Ron, let's try to make a couple of succinct points here and help folks out. So some of the numbers and stats we just talked about are mind-blowing, to say the least. Mind-blowing would be the way I would phrase it as far as what this country, the world, and then this country itself will be dealing with in the next few weeks. The president came out and warned Americans there will be a large number of deaths in the next couple, 3 weeks here as this pandemic ravages the nation, sadly. Now, you say here in a very interesting piece you have on the platform, perhaps it is time to declare our independence again. I encourage everyone to go read that at AmericaOutLoud.com from Ron Edwards. And you say here, Ron, this: the good news is there is what I believe to be a growing force of God-fearing, wise, and highly intelligent refounding fathers. The refounding fathers are the wise patriots from various walks of life, just like the original founders. Now, Ron, that really spoke to me, that couple sentences there, mm-hmm. that small paragraph. First of all, I love the way you said refounding fathers, and I love this growing force of God fearing of the people. Please talk to us.
The roots of this go all the way back to 2013, when I noticed there were quietly growing numbers of Americans who were starting to pray for this country. They were starting to repent for this country, for the things that have been allowed. Many people in the church have been really crying out, and it's still going on to this day. The church sat idly by when abortion was enacted. The church sat idly by when God was kicked out of our schools. It's been basically a huge mess of wimpus Americanus apologeticus, but now parts of the church are starting to get their testicles back, and we're learning to fight back. And that's the only way that this country can be reestablished as a constitutionally limited republic that recognizes our rights and affords opportunities and sets us in a position so that when we do have pandemics, those that are natural and some created by others, we're in a better position to deal with these types of emergencies. Mm-hmm. And so we are, many of us are crying out, and, you know, 2 Chronicles 7:14, it says, if my people will cry out and seek forgiveness, I will hear from heaven, heal their land. And so I believe that is what we're going through. You know, it looks bad, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. We're not going to be in this position forever. And people have to, I believe, as they used to say in Great Britain, keep a stiff upper lip and let us work together as Americans. Let us use our brains and our common sense and our wisdom, which comes from God, and get over this. We will and we shall.
Ron, I referenced this in the last day or so on my program as the great equalizer, this pandemic and the way that it has and is continuing to impact people's lives. You know, I get a sense from emails and responses we've gotten in here at the network that not only are people scared, but some people believe that this is, and let me phrase this properly here so I don't take this the wrong way here, but that possibly this pandemic is, some people would believe it's God's way of shining a path, forcing a path back to human beings here, to our people here on the planet, to, as you say, wise up here. You mentioned some things moments ago about some things as we've been on a wrong path here. You know, I talk a lot about free will on the programs, but is this God's way of warning the world by chance that we need to get it together?
Well, God has set things up, and you hit it on the head. It's called free will. And if we in America remain stupid, and we have been stupid for several decades, and not assume our proper role in the world, we will have created pandemics, whether it's out of whatever nation and wherever it may come from. This is not produced by God to beat us down with, but he allows asinine things to happen and even your enemies to rise up against you if you want to be a foolish idiot. And collectively as a nation, we have been for quite a number of decades. America was founded, was the only nation in the history of the world that was founded and dedicated to God. Not even Israel was done so. Right. Israel was chosen by God. But America said, hey, we want to be on your path, God. But when we drift away from it, we reap the rewards or punishment for not.
I like what you say there. When we drift away from it, you know, Ron, a lot of people, they don't get the real concept of free will. And, you know, I get the sense, I think we're onto something right now because of this. A lot of people, they think that God is supposed to cut it off at the pass. Like people will say, and you know what I'm speaking about. People will say, well, why does God allow that? I mean, you just hit it yourself head on. Why does God allow that? Or why does, you know, this death happen? Or why does, and, you know, I talk about free will because I try to remind people. I talked about it Thursday and Friday on the Voice of a Nation. I think there's a point here that we're talking about that it isn't God's position to cut all the evil off at the pass because we do have free will as man. And I think how we deal with that is going to be vitally important moving forward. I think that's a real big point to make here at this time, isn't it?
Yes, it is. See, God gave us several things. He gave us brains. He didn't make us robots. And when he created Earth, he put man in a position of dominion over the land, over the creeping, crawly things, over the fishes of the sea, and so on, so on, as it says in the Bible. And he gave us the will and the ability to choose life or choose death, choose up or down or whatever. And when man makes good choices, we get good results. When you make foolish choices, you get a bump on the head, okay? So we have to wisen up as a nation and really, really stop trying to blame God and say, well, why did he allow this? No, we allowed it. He gave us authority. And if we don't use our authority to, for instance, raise our children in the right way, they will grow up and take a wrong path, make bad decisions. They'll become Nancy Pelosi's. They'll become, Adam Schiff's and, Ali Obama's or whatever, and make cursed decisions. So we are in a unique position in the United States to turn around and make right decisions. We're not in a dictatorship, although that's what they're trying to bring about upon us. But we've got to fight back, and we still have enough of us. And I believe this, Malcolm, you know that I have an optimistic outlook on things concerning this nation. Yeah. And I just don't believe yet that it's over yet. It's not time.
A lot of people have been talking about end times. I like what you just referenced, because I even said, at the end of the week there on the program that I don't believe these are the end times that they're calling for either. I think it is another hiccup or hurdle in our path of humanity to get it together here. But you're optimistic as a whole, though, aren't you?
Yes, and God is an optimist. But see, God likes people with stones. You can be an imperfect man. Remember how judgmental Christians were about Trump? Because they said, well, he's this, that, and the other.
Exactly.
Yet he had done less wrong than many of the people and preachers that they uplift.
Yeah.
And you will find that out in the days ahead as big preachers are exposed.
Yeah.
And people in government are even more exposed. Mm. And it just comes down to simple choices and the will to stand for what is right and fight for it. We have a choice.
Wow.
We can and choose death or choose life. And it's as simple as that. And we have no choice and have the guts to fight for it. Do you remember when Trump had first got into office and one of his first gatherings with a bunch of ministers, he turned to them and said, hey, why is it that you guys allow yourselves to be pushed around? You all have been, you all have been in the Bible for decades. I'm a newcomer. But yet I have to tell you guys to fight.
I really like the conversation we're having right now with Ron Edwards, people. There's so much that just came out of this last bit of talk here we're having to me that a lot of people could talk for hours and never really nail down the real point here that Ron Edwards just did with me. Wow, what a conversation here. But it should give us all hope and a jump in our steps when you hear Ron put it out there so well and say, well, and as we say, we have free will. These are challenging times. It looks to me, people, that we're going to have some challenging times just ahead here in these next many weeks. But it is a moment and a time for each of us, as I was saying here just on the Voice of a Nation, to step back in our lives and to look at the big picture of our lives and understand where we're at. What do we really want to accomplish in this life? I mean, it comes back to faith and personal responsibility, having that free will to make the right decisions. Friends, a lot happening back at AmericaOutLoud.com. You are welcome there always. Thank you for helping us get the word out. And again, thank you here for being part of this and on the mission with Malcolm to make a difference in the world. It's time to get involved and get loud.